Welcome to the Hold the Line podcast. We are here at Camp Allah in the heart of Capitol Hill, Washington, D.C. What a privilege. Congressman Tim Burchett is here.
Thank you, dude.
Let's go. And slip this in between votes. I'm so grateful that he was able to stop by. I just wanted to give you guys a quick update. This is just an amazing man of God who's in Congress. God has him there serving the people and loves Jesus.
I do.
And I want to get just a little update. First of all, what's it like being a Christian these days on Capitol Hill?
It's like being a Christian anywhere, in the workplace, anywhere else. You know,
yeah.
It's not so much, and people say your votes are affected by it. I say, well, yeah, you know, I pray about everything. The Bible says, you know, pray without ceasing. But the truth is I see it more as, you know, when I have friends in Congress on both sides of the aisle that are troubled or something's going on in their life, and I've always had a heart for folks like that. You know, you talk in the Baptist church, we talk about God's gifts, and obviously mine are not good looks or brains, but due to my chosen profession. But I have a gift, I think, of perception.
Okay.
You know, I've walked through crowds, and I'll see somebody, and, you know, maybe, and I'll say, hang on, I'll get past them. And, you know, I got to go to the bathroom, I got to get food, I got to get to the cameras, I got to get somewhere, you know, and I hang on for a second, and I'll go back and check on them because something's...
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll say, oh, everything's great, but, you know, it's they'll come back later and say, man, I really appreciate that, you know. And so in Congress, it's a lot of that. You know, you've got, I mean, the stakes are incredibly high. And
yeah.
I'm used to the media attention and the pressure and the, you know, the death threats and all that, but some people get, you know, kind of thrown in the deep end.
Yeah, yeah.
And I try to... I'm pretty sure I've lost friends to suicide and things like that. And I just think, you know, and buddies of mine have died and unexpectedly, and I don't know where their soul is.
Yeah.
And so, that pains me.
Yeah.
So I try, and yeah, I'm not saving souls or anything on the House floor or anything, but I talk to folks and I pray for them and I try to, you know, I don't want to be another one of those jerk Christians that cut them off. You know, you got a John 3:16 bumper sticker and you cut them off and then you flip them a bird, you know.
Yeah.
That's what they think of Christians and that's what they'll think of them. So I don't want to be that guy. And maybe I'm not the great vessel, you know, I'm not a great, you know, a representation for Christ. But I try to be. I try to be in a lot of people's lives like that. So, you know, I feel it more that than my votes of... on, you know, this moral stand I'm taking.
Yeah. Well, what do you, I mean, I'd love to hear, how is God moving right now? This whole thing with Mike Johnson coming up out of nowhere, this crazy, disheveled, chaotic process. How do you see God moving in that? How could you encourage people?
Everybody's freaking out during all that thing, 22 days, and people are, you know, jumping ship and calling and threatening me, and, you know, they're going to run against me or work against me. And I what's your plan? And I said, well, you know, as they're dog cussing me, I always think, you know, they're heading to their small group. I say, well, ask your small group about that Bible verse that talks about, you know, God knows if a sparrow falls from the sky and it knows how many hairs on your head. And I believe that. I believe that stuff. I believe God does know that, and he knows every working of your life and everything in the world, and he so I feel like those things, everything is working for his purpose, and for have somebody like the speaker we have in the times that we're seeing, just the moral
decadence,
that's the whole thing. I mean, you know, we're talking about 100,000 kids that came over the border, we don't know where they are, and they could have been sold into sex trafficking, for goodness sakes. How do you, and you don't stand up and take a stand for that.
Right.
To me, it's just, where is the moral fiber of this country?
Right.
Where's the
right.
church?
Right.
Where are the believers?
Come on.
And, you know, and it pains me.
Yeah.
And that kind of thing, I do wake up in the middle. That's what I wake up in the middle of the night thinking about. I think about those dadgum kids.
Yeah.
You know, I married my wife, my wife was a widow, and I adopted her little girl, Isabel, and she's mine. And I started dating her mama when Isabel was five. And so, you know, and I adopted her since we married, and I adopted her since then. But I was down on the border, and there's this family. I know you didn't get me to ask about this, but there's this little family there, and I walked up, and I said, "Hola," and you know, in my redneck voice, and the little girl was about the age of my little Isabel when I started dating her mama, and I put my little hand on her little back, and she smiled, and the Border Patrol agent said, "Congressman, she doesn't speak English," and I said, "Well, I don't either, according to some people." But I thought that little girl, you know, was my little Isabel's age when I started dating her mama. And I thought, man, we got to do better.
Yeah.
God's greatest country that He's put on this earth, in the history of this earth, and we have got to do better.
Right.
And, it starts with me. And I make crazy stands all the time, and I pray about it, and I can't explain it to you. And I remember my daddy said, "You know what I do at night, buddy?" I said, "What's that, daddy?" He said, "I sleep." And what he was saying was he doesn't worry.
Right.
Because he does what's right.
Right.
And he did what was right.
Yeah.
And my mama did too. And I mean, they're both with Jesus now, but you know, I hear them a lot of the things they've said to me as a kid growing up. And daddy was an old combat Marine, Second World War. And when he'd get into a tough spot, what was his process, thought process, and what was going on? And I think about that a lot. And those things.
Do you feel like with this, I guess you could say regime change or whatever, with Mike Johnson coming in, and, which by the way, I loved when he was giving that tour. I think it was the first couple of days of speaker. He brought the press into that that prayer room by the Capitol, which I prayed in, and which we've actually prayed in the rotunda together and worshiped. I just thought that was really cool, highlighting that. You know, that's not wouldn't be a typical thing a speaker would want to show somebody. How hopeful can Americans be with that shift of him coming in, and where are we at as a nation now in that leadership?
I think very hopeful because the fact I think he's going to pray about things, and it might not seem what the media and the beautiful people and the K Street lobbyists wants, but dadgummit, I feel like he's going to do what he feels like is God's will,
right?
And that's the ship this country needs to be getting on,
right?
Because we've gone down the feel good and the if it's, you know, we're going to fund you for everything kind of path, and it's gotten us moral decadence, it's gotten us inflation out of control,
right?
Just, you know, abortion on demand, you just name it, and
right.
those things, there's a cost associated with all that,
right? And so in 2024, what's the hope for the House? What's the hope for America head into these wild elections?
Yeah, I think fiscal sanity
is
something we should pray for, because we're invested in things in other countries that are obviously sinful and are very distasteful to most Americans. And I feel like we should pray for that, because we need to start taking care of our business and the things that we are constitutionally, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, those kind of things. Not doesn't guarantee happiness, but it does life and liberty.
Right.
And I think if we go down that path, we're going to be okay. It's not going to be 100% what we want, but it's going to be a heck of a lot better than what we got.
Yeah. How do you feel when it comes to the tension with Israel? And we've been hosting these Nights of Hope for Israel with Arabs, with Jews, with Christians. We've been gathering together and felt actually a lot of momentum and unity. What's your sense right now?
Well, it's what it's always been. I feel like we've got some old leaders like we do in Washington, and it's just every little microcosm. You've got people that, they're selling memberships. If they're still killing kids, if they're killing each other, suicide bombing, doing all this, those knuckleheads are going to stay in power.
Yeah.
And they're going to keep preaching the hate because it keeps them in power, just like Washington. They're going to keep doing whatever it does to keep them in power, regardless of the financial, the fiscal, moral, or whatever state this country's in. And it's the same with Israel. You're going to have some kind of change up over there. You know, people in Gaza, the kids are taught early on to hate the Jews. And until that changes, you cannot break that cycle.
Yeah.
Case in point of the abortion issue, Roe v. Wade's overturned, but you've got kids, there'll be people 30 plus years, that's what they've lived under is abortion, and that's all they know.
Right.
And so obviously all these states are starting to vote it back in
because
that's all they knew. That's the norm, and the norm is not correct,
right?
But that is the norm.
Right.
And so I feel that way over there. And but I also feel like we ought to let Israel do their business.
Yeah.
Let them take care of it. As I said, Old Testament judgment. I've seen those videos of, you know, the Hamas going into those places and shooting a little girl under a desk. I mean, you know, that's not... Americans aren't ready for that kind of stuff, and we never are. You know, Daddy, when he was in the Pacific, the Japanese, the horrible things they did to the people of China. And it was literally, in one instance, a German doctor wrote the Nazi hierarchy a letter and said, hey, these people are savages. We can't do it. And this was a Nazi saying that a group was savages. So, you know, that's how ruthless they were. But that's the same kind of stuff that we're seeing now with Hamas.
Right. Yeah.
And until we realize we're not, you know, this isn't some UN negotiation kind of thing.
Right. Right. Totally. Totally. 100%.
You've got to go in. You got to let them do their business.
Right. Yeah. Lastly, before you got to go, what are some things we could pray for? You know, we want to rally people. Of course, we have 23 cap. We've done these revival Let Us Worship rallies at 27 U.S. capitals. We got 23 more to go this year. It's crazy what we're doing. But one of our big things is getting the church to pray, getting us to pray for this nation, for this government, for this. Give us some points of prayer.
I think that Christians should pray what their involvement is. You know, Christians for so long were arrogant. We sit on our butts on election day, and then we argue about how bad things are. When 20 million so-called evangelical Christians last election cycle, I'm not telling you how to vote, but you know how I'm going to vote, but 20 million so-called evangelical Christians decided to stay home. Now, that was state, federal, and local. Wow. And you have school board meetings where parents are coming in complaining about literally pornography in the libraries for minor kids to read, and they're being labeled domestic terrorists. So these are things we've got to address, and it's a state, federal, and local level.
Right.
And when they say they stayed home on, you know, election day for the president, it's more than that. It's the, you know, you've got your local races, your state races, and Christians are just, I feel they're arrogant, and we're going to get thumped.
Yeah.
And we better pray for our country and pray for boldness in the church, because we're afraid of what the devil's telling us. The devil's telling us to stay. You know, oh, we don't want to offend anybody.
Right.
Well, the Bible is, you know, no. The Bible is not a moving, it's not a squishy, it's not a sponge.
Right, yeah.
It is a rock solid, that's a, you know, bricks, but you can get it brick and mortar, but it is that. It's not moving.
Yeah.
And it hasn't moved. And when we move it, I think we degrade the moral fabric of this country.
Yeah. How can we mobilize, like, I mean, I hear these facts over and over again, you know, people, you know, they'll whine on Twitter or they'll scream or they'll do whatever, but they won't actually vote. How can we mobilize Christians this cycle to actually be there, not sit on their butts? What is it going to take? I mean, I'll tell you how far it's gone,
how bad it is. I called the head of the Southern Baptist Convention and on a vote that was made last year on an issue. And I said, look, you know, I'm in the turquoise emblem in the center of the Bible Belt. You know, you big red. I'm a redneck, so you got this big Bible. You got this big belt buckle the size of a manhole cover, and I'm in the center of it. And I said, I did not receive one phone call from any preacher, any denomination on this issue. And it was an issue that really affected the church. And the head of the he told me, he said, well, Congressman, that was in between November and December or something like that. And he said, that's our busy time. And I said, but brother, you're not going to be busy when they come lock your doors, because that's ultimately what this is about.
Wow.
And so, you know, we're afraid, we're arrogant. And I mean, you know, there's pretty a lot of evidence of what happens to arrogant folks in the Bible.
Yeah.
You know, Israel was going around that desert for 40 years.
Yeah.
Because they were not adhering to what God was, or listening to what God was saying. And God's told us, and I'm afraid we could be in for a very rude awakening, and these arrogant, and honestly, some of these preachers are not preaching the gospel anymore.
Yeah.
And that scares me. So I think we need bold, and if your church isn't doing it, either get rid of your preacher or get out.
That's a word. Well, I do, I'm with you on the bold believers, and I feel like, you know, in closing, I feel like we're grateful for you. We're grateful for voices like you that oftentimes ruffle feathers, and that's what we need, you know. But we also, I believe, you know, our heart is to provoke the church to do something. And so, any last words to provoke the church?
Pray and ask God what you should do on election day, and I guarantee it's not sitting on your butt watching The View.
Amen. All right, well, God bless you guys. Thanks. Thanks so much, Tim.
That'll do something for ratings. It might get you in trouble, but...